Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 7th. I'm Ray Graff. It's birds today. Rich Guthrie is back to answer your questions. We will check the email bag. We will play an exciting edition of everyone's favorite audio bird game, Bird Brain. If you want to take part in today's discussion, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question for Mr. Guthrie, you can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie and your birding questions coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and when we do that, we welcome back Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a question about birds, this would be the time. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a question for Rich Guthrie. Richard Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Ray, hi. Good to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Indoors, but there we go.
You know, you've obviously had some time on your hands, and now you mentioned that you have something cooking with another Vox Pop guest, meteorologist Jason Goff. What's going on?
Hey, man, this is great. Jason, our buddy Jason and I have teamed up and are coming up with this new and exciting venture of ours. It's called Birdcast Coast to Coast.
What is that?
And let me explain what that is, because it's great. It's a monthly look into the fascinating world of birds and the people who love them. That's y'all.
Yeah.
From our nerve center here in upstate New York, Birdcast will offer top news stories relating to the science and culture of birding. You know, that's the people, places, and things of birding.
Yeah.
World news about notable sightings from across the continent, and as well as visually breathtaking, in-depth studies of the bird species and the people who love them.
So what
lots of ground there, lots of stuff.
What is Jason going to do?
Jason and I, well, we're going to be a tag team. He and I will be going out. We'll be up to our armpits in swamp grass and the like.
I see.
Not necessarily, but it could happen.
And you're videotaping
this? It'd be fun to watch just for that.
And you're going to shoot this on video and show the video once a month?
Yeah, we are. It's going to be it's going to be available as it is now. And this is the way to find it, and we'll go back to this again later, is to go to facebook.com/birdcastcc.
Birdcastcc.
CC.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. You know, facebook.com/birdcastcc. And you'll see Jason and me and folks who would like to join us, who's the various social media to send photos and videos and questions that you might have featured on the Birdcast.
Well, I wish you both great success, although I find it somewhat annoying that you are two-timing Vox Pop, both of you. But you know what? We'll let that slide, right?
Well, we're three-timing, Ray. One, two, three.
All right. So, you know, before we started the show, Ian Pickus, a terrified Ian Pickus, sent me an email and said, you know, this is very frightening to me. And it was a video of a huge osprey carrying what looked to be a shark high over a beach. And he said,
yeah,
this can't possibly be real. So I sent it to you. And what's your verdict?
Sure.
Right?
Hey, yeah. Osprey carrying a fish. Nothing big about that.
That's huge fish.
I know, but you know, with what people can do with videos nowadays, I think it's an exaggeration of size, both the bird and the fish.
Okay.
And but nonetheless, it's genuine. There is an osprey carrying what looks like a nursery shark,
yeah,
and or sand shark, or one of those. You know, and they're not a big shark, but they're definitely a shark.
So when an osprey like that will pick up a fish out of the ocean and fly, does it take it to a nice grassy knoll, drop it, and have a little lunch? How does it work?
more than likely. Or this time of year, it could be bringing it back to the nest to feed the family.
Oh, okay. That would be a big nest. But all right. You ready to play a game, Rich?
Let's go.
Let's play an exciting edition. We don't do this every show. We're going to play Bird Brain, America's favorite audio bird game. June from Sullivan County sent this audio in. It's up to you, Richard P. Guthrie, to identify it.
Okay. Yeah. Is that it?
Well, what do you want? How much more do you need?
You know. It sounds like somebody whistling into a microphone.
So you don't think it was real?
Well, no, I could.
All right, you want to hear it again?
Let's hear it again, it's so generic. Go ahead, let's see what happens.
Okay.
Well, I hear a vireo or a robin in the background there, but the whistle sound... it really sounds like somebody whistling into a microphone, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and go with it as probably a young hawk.
Hang on, let's check with the judges on that. Young hawk is your final answer?
Yes, and that gives me a pretty wide choice of red tail, red shouldered, broad wing, and
all right,
and who knows from what.
Judges, can we accept that? All right, Rich Guthrie, well done. Well played, sir. Thank you very much for playing Bird Brain with us today. So you think that could be a hoax?
Well, playing games, yeah, it sounds very people-like whistle.
All right,
something that I could do.
So what you're saying is June in Sullivan County is not being forthright and truthful.
I believe June is being forthright and truthful, but my ears may deceive me.
Right.
I trust June.
Right.
June and... It's Sullivan County.
All right, Rich Guthrie, we have a full bank of calls, as we always do when you're on.
Okay.
And all right, let's grab one right now, and then we'll take a break, and then we will start the calls in earnest. Emily in Pittstown. Emily.
Hi. My question is today, I have a hummingbird feeder out, and I was wondering, why in the world do I have a downy woodpecker on my hummingbird feeder?
Huh. What you have is a very smart downy woodpecker.
Right
to be surprised by that, because ordinarily downy woodpeckers are not attracted to bright red-colored things, such as a hummingbird feeder. But what he's been doing, or she has been doing, is been watching a hummingbird coming back again and again and again to this interesting source of what may be interesting. And sure enough, it tried it out and said, not bad, I'll be back. And there you go.
That's awesome. I'm just afraid I'm going to give all of the woodpeckers diabetes.
Oh.
No, don't worry about that. They can handle it. Here's a story about that. And you're right to bring that concern up, because we people have that sort of concern. Diabetes and cholesterol and high fat content and all that sort of stuff. Rightfully so. But the birds... they have such a high metabolism. They have exercise like we could never achieve in a normal lifetime. Back in the tree hopping days, we probably could get to that level, but not anymore.
All right. Well, Emily, thanks a lot. Rich, when were your tree hopping days? This is interesting.
My long, long, long time ago.
All right. Well, let's save that for another show. Why don't you do an episode with Jason Goff on the tree hopping? Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Oh, we've only just begun. Plenty of bird things to talk about. Vox Pop on WAMC. The great Rich Guthrie joins us today. 800-348-2551 if you have a bird question. And tell you what, Rich, you have usually a list of events. Why don't we hold off till the 2:40 break and do that, since we have so many calls. Go ahead.
I'm all for it. Let's go.
All right, sir. Three or four emails here and then back to the phones. This one is from Jim. Came in well before our show started. A pair of cardinals have made their home in our backyard. Is there a chance they'll return next year?
Yep. In fact, they probably won't even leave. Cardinals are not migratory in our area. And And so they're here to stay. Now, what will happen is over the winter, the extended family may come and join them if you have a bird feeder station going. And so you'll have, you know, a bunch of happy cardinals around. Next spring, the parent pair will hunker down and reclaim the territory, and the kids will have to go find their own.
All right. This one is from Sleepless in Forestburg, New York. Good afternoon. We have a very annoying whippoorwill that perches on our roof every night. Needless to say, we don't sleep a lot. It leaves for a while when we shine a flashlight on it, but then it comes back several times until dawn. The flashlight works, but cannot be kept on all night. The bird is very, very noisy. We need help. And that's from Sleepless in Forestburg.
Can't help you.
What? What do you mean?
No, the whippoorwill, first of all, a lot of people would be very envious. They're looking at right now with green eyes at this whole thing. And the whippoorwill found its territory. He's going to be there. And you're very fortunate because whippoorwills have become very scarce in our area.
Right.
And few and far between. So, you know, I would love to have a whippoorwill outside my window at night. But, yeah, they are vociferous, which is what they are. And what's interesting about whippoorwills, back in the old days, yeah, over in the old country, they used to call these things goat suckers.
I'm sorry? What?
Goat suckers, because the medieval myth was that these relatives to our whippoorwill,
yeah,
the nightjars of Europe, would sneak into the barn and dry the milk from the goats before dawn, during the course of the night. And so the whole family is stuck with that name.
That's interesting.
Capri Mugli Formes, which means goat suckers.
In what language?
Yes.
Ah. I think chupacabra, too, right? That's a goat sucker, is it not? This is from Tim in Williamstown. I've noticed that most songbirds stop foraging and begin to roost around sunset. Robins seem to stay out much longer than the others. Any reason why robins have a later bedtime?
Well, they just are twilight birds. Twilight in the morning and twilight in the evening. And they're the early bird that sings before the light begins to shine over the horizon.
Hmm.
And the same thing at night, as do the other thrushes. The robin is a member of the thrush family.
Yeah.
And so the wood thrush and the veery and the hermit thrush are all known for their crepuscular singing.
I like it. All right, this is from Eliza. Two more emails, and then to the phones we go. Eliza writes, during those hot, dry June days, I had a small gray bird with a white breast swoop down, zoom across our pool, skimming lightly along the surface,
wow,
and land on our fence. The bird had a small, more brownish companion who watched but did not try the same feat. The well-used bird bath is just a few feet away at the risk of anthropomorphizing. Was this done for fun and excitement? What kind of a bird? What was much like a tufted... Oh, it looked much like a tufted titmouse, but no crest.
Right. I'm going to guess it was a swallow, probably a tree swallow. The back color was probably metallic blue-green or, in the young ones, a brownish coloration. And what they do is they skim across a water surface, grab a drink of water, or if they're not likely in a swimming pool, but if they're emerging mosquitoes, larvae or mosquitoes or mayflies, grab the little critter as it's emerging from the water surface.
Mm.
So, and the companion, I'm going to guess, was a bronze swallow. Both swallows both do the same thing, and they both, you know, eat bugs.
And they hang
air.
Out. They don't have a problem. They like to hang.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be a little concerned about the chlorine content of the water.
Mm.
But they're drawn to it, and you'll see them over a pond do that very same thing.
Okay.
And it's beautiful to watch. They're so agile in the air.
You know, if you're in one of those municipalities where you have chlorinated water and you fill your bird bath, it's the same deal, though, right?
Yeah, but after a while, out in the sun and the air, the chlorine will dissipate out into the atmosphere. So
okay,
it will be a reduced amount of chlorine.
All right.
What I do is I use rainwater. I gather rainwater, and I use that in the bird bath.
By the way, how often do you clean your bird bath?
I don't. It's not a big hurry-up thing for me. Every now and then, when it looks too grungy for my taste, I'll just empty it and refill it, you know, swirl around a little bit. But the natural algae growth in a bird bath is not too unfamiliar with the birds. They're used to that.
I'm more concerned about conjunctivitis.
I wouldn't be concerned about that in a bird bath. That's more of a bird feeder issue.
Oh.
And if a bird shows up with symptoms of conjunctivitis, that is crusty eyelids, that causes eyelids to pinch closed. Very, very terrible for birds. But it doesn't seem to be a big issue these days. It seems to have diminished or disappeared from the wild bird population. There was a big problem several years ago, maybe 30 years ago.
I only laugh, Rich, because I've petrified my wife. We have a bird feeder, and I said, look, I do this show at least once a month, and you got to clean that bird feeder once a week, because the bird bath once a week because of the conjunctivitis. And I've been wrong all this time, and now she's off the hook.
Well, nothing wrong about that. There's nothing wrong about cleaning it periodically. Not a thing wrong.
All right, we don't have bird feeders, but the bee bombs are out, and now the hummingbirds are coming back in force. So that's
there you
nice.
Go.
All right, last email, and then we will hit the phones. This is from Andrea. Andrea writes, after trying for years, I finally had success attracting Baltimore Orioles to my feeder. I noticed that they like a high nest, so I thought they might like the feeder higher. I have raised ranch, so I hung it outside the front window, and now I have them regularly. They have even been around now, which is later than usual. Maybe coincidence, but may help others. And that's from Andrea.
Andrea, thank you very much. That, you know, that's a brilliant observation and also a very nice experiment to put out there. And thank you for sharing that. I think that's probably a secret to successful oriole feeding. Something I'd have to try.
By the way, we did get an email back from the lady who did the audio. And she said, you know what? It was not a hoax. It was done on an iPhone. I have three different recordings taken 1 minute
apart.
Okay. Not arguing that it could be a hawk. But,
ow.
But it's legit. All right, to the phones we go.
I stand apologetic.
That's
and
okay.
I'm with you there. And keep an eye out for whatever hawk it may be. And also, let us know.
All right, yeah, that's a good idea. All right, now we hit the phones and we go to Russ in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Russ, you're up.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Rich. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I'm not a bird watcher per se, but I have a friend in the nursing home in Greenfield, and so we have some bird feeders set up outside her room, and one of them is a hummingbird feeder, and it is a good brand-new hummingbird feeder. But we're not getting the birds there, and I know there have been hummingbirds there in the past because I did see an old feeder. So what else can I do for attracting them? I've got it hanging in a tree about 5-6 feet off the ground. Is that a good spot?
Well, a lot depends on what else is there. If it's an isolated feeder away from shrubbery and the like, the chance of usage is going to be diminished greatly. Birds like to have a little shelter nearby a bird feeder. But I will say that given time, a few birds may find it. And once they do, other birds will copycat and come in, like the downy woodpecker earlier that was coming to the hummingbird feeder. That was a copycat reaction, and other birds will learn from one another what's good.
There are two other bird feeders in that same tree, not too far away. So there are birds coming there already, and it is getting shade. So the sugar water. How often should I replace that if it's not getting drunk?
Good question.
A good question is right. And it all depends on the temperature outside. These warm days, exchanging it, cleaning it regularly is important.
Regularly meaning?
Well, it depends on the temperature.
Often?
But maybe two or three days a week at the longest.
Okay.
And the cooler days, it could stay longer because what you're worried about is the sugar fermenting and,
right,
and becoming moldy or the like. So you want to be careful.
Yeah, I realize that. Yeah, thank you. And if I, since there aren't any good flowers in that area there, if I tie some orange surveyor's tape from the branch near the feeder, could that help to attract?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, I have some friends who wear a ribbon in their bonnet for the idea of attracting hummingbirds while they're out working in the garden. And it works.
Right.
The hummingbirds are drawn especially to the color red. And and if you have a chance to put a planter out there with some red flowers in it, even geraniums or a poppy, what do you call those little guys? Petunias in there.
Yeah.
Or any of those flashy red flowers that could also attract the hummingbirds to the feeder. Once they discover it, they'll be back.
All right, Russ, thank you very much. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, the call of the mockingbird and the call of the catbird, we're wondering how we can tell apart which one would be which when we can't see it. We hear these calls a lot, the imitations that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a kind of rule of thumb that helps to know which one you're hearing when you can't see what's doing it?
Hmm. Well, the mockingbird and the catbird are closely related. They're both what we call mimic thrushes because they do mimic other bird songs and calls. There is a song and call, but there is a the difference between the two is the mockingbird will say the same song more than once. It'll go three or four times with the same rendition and then switch to another one and then maybe go back to the original one and then on to another one, three or four or five times each. Whereas the catbird is one time, and the truth is they don't do a good job at mimicking. It doesn't sound musical at all, and you have to really use some imagination to try to identify what song the catbird is trying to imitate. So... And it's a squeaky, somewhat musical, but not anywhere near as talented as the mockingbird.
Okay, Nancy?
All right. I'll try to see if we can figure that one out then. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the catbird will also do its trademark meow call periodically.
Okay.
And so you'll hear that mixed in. So that's also a tip-off clue.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. Gloria in Galway. Gloria.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a question for you. In May, which is quite a while ago, we heard for two nights in a row a whippoorwill. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm 85 years old. I haven't heard a whippoorwill since I was a young lady. And I'm wondering, are they back in the area?
Probably not. And thank you. But that was great. When long ago, well, not that long ago, but the whippoorwill was more widespread and present throughout the Northeast. And over the years, there has been a drastic pullback, withdrawal, or decline in the number of whippoorwills and their close relatives, the other goat suckers, the nighthawk. And the reason for that is, as you may notice also, that there are very far fewer insects out at night these days and nights. And we see that when you drive down the highway at night. You used to have to scrape the bugs off the windshield as you when you got back home. Not so much anymore. I mean, that's happy news for the driver who doesn't have to clean the windshield quite so much. But that means that we have far fewer food for these nighttime insect-eating birds, the whippoorwill and the nighthawk. And the bird that you heard was probably one that was migrating through. And what they would do is they'll stop periodically and, you know, blast out a few songs to see if there's any interest in the area, like, hello, Mrs. Whippoorwill. no takers, moving on. They go on to where they had intended.
Well, I
in the first
wish
place.
It was saying hello, Gloria, because it brought tears of joy to my eyes just to hear that bird again.
And I don't blame you. And you and I both love the sound of the whippoorwill. Our earlier caller, not quite so much.
No, not so much. But, well, Gloria, thank you.
Oh, I loved it.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate your call today. Gene in Schenectady. Hello, Gene.
Hi. We have truly enjoyed watching a recent nesting of killdeer birds. We watched two batches hatch so far this year. When winter is approaching and they're flying south, do they nest again, and where do they fly? How far south do they go? Will they hatch more young?
Good question. And yes, killdeer may occasionally produce a second brood while they're up here during the summer months. And killdeer is a type of sandpiper. It's a plover, which is a name derived from the old French word for rain. And plovers over in the old country would be called rain callers. Now, the killdeer in America is winters probably not far south, as far north as New Jersey, but most of them go much further south. We get the occasional one on our Christmas bird counts in December, where you'll have, you know, a particularly hardy one or tardy one late to leave. But they're wonderful birds. Right now, they'll be gathering up in flocks. The young and the adults will gather up in small groups, getting ready for their migration south. Again, some of them not far, and most of them much further, Florida, Georgia, the Gulf states, and beyond.
All right, Gene, thanks a lot for that one. And Sue and Del Mar. Sue, we'll take a break after your call. Go ahead.
Hi, Ray and Rich. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I called originally because my hummingbirds have stopped coming, and you've had two or three hummingbird calls, but I thought I'd hang on to mention or ask you to comment on the problem with ants and hummingbirds. And I just want to say I made my homemade ant moat and still no hummingbirds, but could you comment on the ant problem?
The ants are more a problem for us than the hummingbirds. They're used to them, ants and bees. You know, they'll move around until there's an opening for them to get in, or they'll just simply ignore them and chase off the occasional honeybee or the like. And I think they don't mind the ants so much. I've seen them feed side by side with ants at a hummingbird feeder. To me, it's more of a problem that I have, you know, just knowing that the ants are there. They're not like a welcome guest. And so what I do, I have the liberty. I hang my hummingbird feeder on a grapevine. And so I just relocate it periodically and throw the ants off the trail. But the and that lasts for just for so long because the ants have scouts all over the place, so they're just trying to track down the new location. So
so keep moving.
Well, thank you so much,
Sue. Thanks a lot.
Right now, the hummingbirds are pretty much done nesting. The young are pretty much probably all out of the nest by now. And but they're very territorial when it comes to holding on to the territory, the bird feeder. The male hummingbird will be dominant and, chase away any female or young that come in. But once he starts, and they'll begin to migrate pretty soon. Migration has actually just begun for many bird species. The shorebirds, the relatives to the killdeer, are already moving through the area. In small numbers, the numbers will grow through July and into August. But right now, we're just the beginnings. And just the other day, I live along the Hudson River here.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the gulls from further north. As they're done nesting, they're migrating down the river southward.
All right, Rich, let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Birding today with Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551 is the number, but don't bother at the moment. If you hear somebody hang up, that's the shot you have. Right now, the phone lines are very busy. Our email box is overflowing, and I'm not sure we'll get to all of those. Rich, you do have, we've had the lockdown, and a lot of these events that we normally talk about haven't been happening, but now we got a trickle, right?
We have barely a trickle. But here's the good news. You know, we take this COVID business very seriously. And these clubs, as you say, have canceled, postponed all these field trips and meetings and activities for now. But here's the thing. Be sure to check out their websites and think about visiting the places they would have gone had they had their field trips. And these people in these clubs know the places in their patch. And you could do well just by taking the recommended precautions and heading on out there to the sites. Now, let me run down a little list of where these sites are. Hmm. This is the Hudson Mohawk. You can Google each of these. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, the Mearns Bird Club down the Hudson Valley there, the Waterman Bird Club over in Dutchess County, New York, over in Springfield, Massachusetts, the Allen Bird Club, the Hudson River Audubon Society, another one down the river. Now, they are planning a trip on June. We're into July.
That's all right, Rich. Say it anyway.
Yeah, right. The Hudson River Audubon Society. Check out their website and the places they would go to. Again, and then the Delaware Otsego Audubon and Bedford Audubon and the John Burroughs Natural History Society. Go to their websites and check out where they would have been going and try it out for yourself with the social distancing and recommended precautions.
Sure.
And then while we're at it, we're right in the midst of the very important Atlas New York Bird Project. That is documenting the nesting distribution of birds in New York State. And if you're in Vermont or Massachusetts, you can follow the protocols and enter data into your various eBird sites. Go to eBird.org. For the Atlas, it's nybirds.org, and you can join the Atlas Project and contribute to very worthwhile science.
All right, Richard P. Guthrie. Now, we have at least four callers who have been waiting upwards of 25 minutes to get on. So we'll do one email, and then we'll get right back to the phones for the lightning round. This one's from Wistie in Shelburne Falls. Wistie writes, I have a neighbor who insists on leaving her bird feeder up this time of year. She bellows all day, yelling at the pigeons who come to feast on it. She says she's tried everything to keep them away, but nothing has worked. Any advice other than taking it down? And that's from Wistie.
Change the bird seed type to something a little away from pigeon delicacies. And also a hanging bird feeder with smaller openings and tiny perches will be useful to the small birds like the finches and chickadees and titmice and the like. Suet works. You can still put suet up. These suet cakes are good. They don't render during the summer warm weather. And also hummingbird feeders. And the other important ingredient out there is water.
All right. Now to the phones. And having waited nearly 30 minutes, we go to Judy in Colebrook. Judy. Uh-oh, she's listening on the radio because, you know, she's been waiting so long. I'm going to give her a few seconds here to turn the radio. Judy, turn the radio down.
Hello, Judy.
Hello, Judy.
Judy, Judy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. I have another whippoorwill call. I'm here in Colebrook. And every summer we hear the whippoorwill. And my question is, how in the world does he go on so long without taking a breath?
You know, that's a good question. And I read an article a long time ago. Some fellow was observing the whippoorwills, and he counted over 2,000 whippoorwill renditions of its song. In a row, and they just go on and on. I can't blame that fellow who called earlier about, you know, after a while, enough is enough.
I love to hear it. When I hear that whippoorwill, I've been coming here summers 45 years, and every time I hear the whippoorwill, I say, all's right with the world.
I love it.
His world, anyway.
I love you.
Can I share with you a whippoorwill call? I've got it recorded.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
When whippoorwill calls. Oh, my gosh. That's it?
Judy, thank you.
Oh, are they only at night, Rich? Judy, thanks a lot for the call. Really? I've heard
only
that.
Only at night. I think only at mysterious, lovable sound of the night.
Well, that was a great one. Judy, thanks a lot for the call. Now let's go over to Andy in Rhinebeck. Andy.
Hi, Ray. I want to ask Rich, how attached do tree swallow nuclear families get?
Ask me that again.
How attached do tree swallow nuclear families get?
Oh, not so much. Depends on during the nesting season. They are very territorial about defending their one pair nesting site. The extended family will have to go and find their own. But after they're done nesting, then it's a big family reunion time, and they all get together. And in fact, down in some areas, you'll see in fall migration hundreds and hundreds of tree swallows and the other species mix and mingling together as they gather up for their night roost and it's part of their migration. So, yeah, right now they're, you know, antisocial. Later on, it's big party time.
All right, Andy, thanks a lot. Now to Jeanette in Albany. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi. Thank you. We're having a problem with birds hitting our windows. We've been in the house 10 years, and I know of two times that we had birds hit the windows before this summer, but now it's like an almost daily occurrence. Is there something going on with the bird population?
Not at all. What it is first of all, it's birds seeing their the reflection of the forest behind them or the woods or trees or shrubbery, that the window is acting as a mirror. And they think they're flying into shrubbery or a tree or sky, when actually it's a pane of glass instead. And they hit that, and it's dreadful. What you can do is reduce the reflection level, either by putting light on the inside, or they now have these reflective strips that that are invisible to us, but reflect the ultraviolet light that the birds can see. And it deters them. It warns them that they're approaching something impenetrable. And you can go online and look for these reflective strips that serve as deterrents for bird window collisions. And it's a terrible thing. It's something that it's avoidable. But and we're still working on it because it's we're looking at that as a serious problem, and would love to be able to solve it.
All right, Jeanette, thanks so much for the call. Now to Diane in Clarksville. Hello, Diane.
Good afternoon. Great show.
Thank you.
We were lucky enough to have a pair of pileated woodpeckers build a nest on a dead tree right at the edge of our property. And so my questions are, we think they had two chicks, and one was very aggressive, sticking its head out the hole to get fed. And I hadn't seen the smaller one in a while, and I wonder if the parents make sure to feed the less aggressive chick?
They try to an extent, but not always works, because this is the mechanism out there is if there's a particularly strong dominant in the nest, it'll probably win the battle for survival. And the parents are, you know, they care, but they don't know enough to search out. You've had your share. Now let's go to the other. Many birds will do that. They will bypass the biggest, widest, loudest open mouth and go to the next one in line. But most do not. They just go for the one that says, hey, I'm here. And they just they go right and feed the dominant bird. But most birds in the nest will take turns. They'll take turns. You know, one will be satiated and the other one will be hungry.
Okay. And the other question was, I think the stronger one fledged just like 2 days ago, and we're wondering.
Oh, Diane got disconnected. Well, did you?
I got the gist.
Okay, go ahead.
And the birds will keep tending to the remaining bird in the nest. They'll have to go back and forth to the outside bird and the inside bird.
Oh, you're good, Rich. You're real good. Kateri in Sheffield, you're on.
Hi. Thanks so much.
You bet.
I'm wondering if you've noticed a boom in cuckoo numbers this year. I've done breeding bird plant counts in a forest in northwest Connecticut for the last 3 years and no cuckoos. And now we're getting multiple cuckoos in small areas, and it's exciting. Mostly yellow-billed, but a few black-billed even.
Huh.
Could there be something going on this year, like
yes,
insect outbreak?
That's wonderful for you. And just as a backup, we have two kinds of cuckoos in our area, the black-billed and the yellow-billed, as you note. And it's amazing that somehow in the dips where they overwinter in the tropics of South America, Central America, and somehow there's a trigger down there that they know that they've come north. They all surge northward to a abundance of food that's up here. And they're caterpillar eaters, mainly the fuzzy caterpillars, such as the woolly bear or the tent caterpillar. And they're one of the few birds that relish these troublesome little insect larvae. But nonetheless, the cuckoos are around this year in higher than usual numbers. And it's a great thing. They don't tell time like the European cousins can. They're in a different time zone, and they have a different call than the song than the European cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. The American cuckoos have the one goes one note, and the other one goes three notes, coo, 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 and then the three coo, 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 coo. That's how you can tell them apart when you don't see them.
Ah, okay. Good for you, Kateri.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
Wonderful, and good job doing the point counts on cuckoos and other bird species. Good job.
Only two kinds of cuckoos around. I could have fooled me. All right, let's
go. You know who's a cuckoo in North America? The Roadrunner. Beep, beep.
That's
a species of cuckoo that we have. No. Not around here, but in Arizona and California. Beep, beep.
I'll be darned. Joan in Schenectady. Joan, you're on.
Hey, thank you both, gentlemen. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Rich. This kind of relates to the other bird feeding parent-child thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blessed with having an upstairs bird feeder above me, and so a lot of the seed falls to the ground right below my window. I have been watching birds almost of the same size, different gender by marking, mostly sparrows, I think, maybe finches, even grackles. When the bird flutters its wings, the other bird of either gender will stuff a seed into its mouth.
Yeah.
They're trying to teach their fledglings how to eat, right?
Yes. Yeah. And across the bird world, that is a very familiar trigger for a feeding mechanism from the parent birds. The little birds will flutter their wings and open their mouth, and there will come a bunch of bird seed or a worm or a bug or what have you. And it goes around the table with the bird families. Now, and it's also the adult female will use that behavior to attract the attention of the male. And there's some thought that she's training him how to feed the babies. And this is how you do it, you know, like changing diapers. You got to teach them how to do it.
Okay.
Oh, I wondered because it looked like adults and infant or fledglings.
Yeah.
Thank you. That really answers what I'm seeing.
Thanks,
there
Joan.
There you go, then.
All right. Yeah. Very quickly, Lorenzo in Athens. Lorenzo.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I was wondering if Rich could talk about the habits of barred owls. We've been fortunate enough the last couple of weeks. We've had at first one appearing about the same time every night. And then the other night we saw three of them. So we're wondering if it's the family out hunting and it could expand on that.
Okay.
Yeah,
a minute,
great.
Rich.
Yeah. How lucky you are to have the barred owl. These are the B-A-R-R-E-D, not anything related to Shakespearean expertise.
Right.
But the barred owl... young should be out of the nest right now, and what you're seeing is the family group of barred owls. And lucky you!
It is so amazing to really see them every night. They seem to show up right around the same time, right around dusk. And we're wondering if would they be hunting all night? Because of course we can't really see them when it gets real dark.
You say hunting?
Well, the same as the daytime birds, but in the nighttime fashion. Hunt, rest, hunt, rest, hunt, rest. You know?
Okay.
Hungry, got to go out and eat.
All right, Lorenzo.
Got to go home and rest.
We're about done here, but thank you for the call. All right, Rich Guthrie, this project you have with Jason Goff, once again, how do people find it?
Go to facebook.com/birdcastcc. facebook.com/birdcastcc. BIRDCASTCC.
And now, when does that begin? Have you done a show yet?
It's on now.
Really? And when's the next one come out?
Shortly.
How do you do that with the social distancing? You don't want to get in the same room with Jason Goff, right?
We work it out. We're out there in the fresh air.
All right, man. Hey, listen, thanks for coming on the program. And if your TV schedule allows, you know, we'd love to have you back at some point. So thank you, sir.
Right. Thank you.
All right, man. Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, add news at lglc.org. The Hyde Collection, temporarily closed to support our community, providing online art with images and virtual exhibitions. HydeCollection.org for details. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing custom exhibit design and fabrication, including protective shielding, acrylic dividers, and portable barriers for office and retail environments. Your partner for a custom experience, EmpireExhibits.com. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for being here. And I'm so sorry to everybody who didn't get on the program, who wanted to be on the program. Rich is really, really popular. And with any luck, we'll have him back soon. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Amber Sickles took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, you're ready to get, limbered up and ready to... We're doing physical therapy over the phone with Matthew Goodemote. Will it work? Well, who knows? We'll find out tomorrow at 2. Stand by for the book show.